Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This episode of All the President's Minutes is brought to you by Bella Catering. BellaCatering.com.au is where you can find Sydney's best catering company. And now they're doing home delivery. Check out what they've got. Get to it fast, Sydney. Victoria is already shut down, which is good. They're acting like idiots down in Victoria, but we are no less idiots here in New South Wales. So, my dear friends and listeners and folks, you of course have come across folks who are not doing the right thing with COVID-19. You need to contact Bella Catering while you can. Get the people to your house now that you want to visit. Check their temperature before they get in the door. Make sure that they're hand sanitized. Feed them with some delicious Bella Catering food, bellacatering.com.au. They are responsible for the show this week. We must thank them. We must love Glenn and Maria and thank their team and everything they do. Now, let's get on to the show.
This was much worse than we thought. Nixon was worse than we thought. What happened was worse than we thought.
He violated the law, he compromised the office, and he left a deep and wide black mark in American presidential history.
No, there will be no picture. Just take it right now. This is right after the broadcast. You got it? Come on. Okay. That's enough. My friend Ollie, oh, he's about to take a lot of pictures of me. I'm afraid he'll catch me picking my nose.
Can't believe that that guy was president of the United States because he is just branded in our national memory as a crook. And I think it's really important to understand the wrong approach to executive power that led Nixon to those crimes.
Oh, you're on a level, don't you? Yes, yes. Good evening. This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of our nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All the President's Minutes. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Joining me today is a man who doesn't even know what minute he's been assigned.
And I've been in lockdown, man.
And what is so awesome, you hear that? This is the first episode of All the President's Minutes that has been recorded face to face. I'm grasping the shoulder of the man that's sitting across from me, which is fucking exciting. And we're having a beer. It's a late night podcasting session. He's angry all the time about a variety of things, as we all should be. And he's a good friend and an incredibly sharp film mind. And someone I wanted to get back onto the show because we haven't had too many repeat visitors in All the President's Minutes just yet. We spoke very early. And actually, we spoke in the middle of our own global climate crisis, the Australian bushfires, which had consumed the country. That's how long ago we spoke. And the country was still essentially engulfed in flames and steaming hot on the day. I remember, I think it was something like 40-odd degrees on the day that we recorded our last episode.
Yeah, that rings a bell. It
was a hot day. It was a gross day. And now we're in the middle of and new spikes of COVID-19. So I thought I'd get this guy back. He's a writer all about town. If you've read him in Australia, you've read him at places like Metro, SBS Movies. He was the engine that ran filming for many a year. He's looking very svelte. COVID and isolation's doing him good, doing him wonders. And he got a new jacket. I'm excited to speak to him. I'm excited to see his face. Travis Johnson, welcome to All the President's Minutes.
Thank you. It is really nice to be back, man. It is really nice.
It's nice to have you here. It's nice.
Let the people at home hear this.
Look at that. One Heat Minute Productions has a studio, folks, and there's a man sitting in it. And this is, I couldn't be more happy. I couldn't be more happy that we're here, we're in the studio, we're talking. It's fun.
It is. It is.
So, all the president's men, we've spoken about your relationship to it before. So what I thought might be good, considering I didn't even remember to tell you which minute, but I love how still game you are. Like, yeah, we'll figure it out on the way.
Roll the dice. I can just keep it general.
So we're in the mix of a couple of crazy minutes where we've gone through and we've seen Lindsay Krause's character, Kay Eddie, be sort of absconded upon by the two journos asking her if she'll see an ex-fiancé for the list of the committee to re-elect the president. She has done a really gracious thing, even though Woodward sort of curbed their berating / interrogation of her, and she's gotten the list. So we're in the midst of a lead, a tangible lead of a bunch of people who are observing the political malfeasance and all-round fuckery of those officers, and these guys finally have some names and they can start at least presuming hierarchical people knocking on doors, traditional shoe leather. So I think the best thing that we can do to kick this bad boy off before talking just the incredible world that we're living in right now that we weren't living in the last time we spoke on this show, we should watch the minute. You guys can listen along. It is the 65th minute of Alan J. Pakula's and Robert Redford's 1976 masterpiece, All the President's Men. This is now 1 hour, 4 minutes on your dial. So the 65th minute, that's where you want to be. Cue it up, press play. Listen along now if you can't. Cue it up. Travis and I are going to watch together. We are really going to watch together, yeah. Not just virtually, as sometimes happens. Really going to watch together now. You guys are going to listen along, and then we're going to come back and talk about it.
You're like the president.
This is all in alphabetical order. You can't tell who works for who.
Find out the department heads, like Mitchell, Magruder, Stans.
Here, John Mitchell.
What's the number?
301.
All right, find somebody who has a number close to it. They probably work for
Here's a 303.
Okay.
We have to find out how the money got from Maurice Stans, right, to the burglars.
Right, somebody who worked in finance.
All right, here's the head of finance, Maurice Stans, 269.
We can just get somebody who works under Stans.
Sloan, you need him?
No, he's the treasurer. What's the number?
It's Hugh Sloan, 287.
Is there a secretary?
Manley.
There it is.
Manley.
Irene Manley?
Yeah.
1406 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway.
Hi, I'm Bob Woodward.
I'm Carl Burns.
We're from the Washington Post. We'd like to know if we could speak to you for a few minutes. We understand your daughter works for the committee to re-elect.
Wouldn't be anything embarrassing.
Would you object to just spending this?
There it is.
Interesting. Number crunching, data management.
And also a nice little bit of nous, like, oh, that office is next to that one. That makes sense. That's some good stuff. And it's one of those moments. There's only a few that have happened recently that I've been talking about where David Shire makes himself present by having the score happening. Like, this is one of the first, there's only sort of a couple of sections of this film where his score kind of makes itself, sort of overt. Announces itself. Yeah, it's overt. It's all happening so deep background and very moody. But right now it's like, it is, you know, cars moving, doors slamming become these percussive notes to offset his, you know, swelling score. And it's got a tempo that's just like, da-na, da-na.
And it's very kind of classical 70s conspiracy kind of, kind of parallax view, kind of 3 days of the condo. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like the Simpsons have parodied this exact tone so many fucking times. This exact scene when Mr. Burns was running for election and Lisa's crunching the numbers, right?
Oh my gosh.
And if we look at this visually, it's really interesting because the only face you see in this entire sequence is that guy at the end who slams the door in their face.
About 50 seconds in, there's a guy with...
So even when Redford and Hoffman are on screen, we just see the backs of their heads. And everything else is like, first it's a page of like names and numbers and a finger tracing that. We close in on some of that. And then it's traffic. It's like the overhead shot of the parking lot and them driving through the streets of Washington and the sort of gray drab buildings there. It's a very impersonal minute because it's talking about systems and how people are organized in the systems and social and capitalist and political structures and how those are corrupt and subject to manipulation and how it takes a certain kind of brain and dogged determination to pass this deliberately confusing information. in order to get a lead and to get someone on the hook.
It's one of the things that struck me in this minute, and I've got to talk around it to get back to where I want to talk to it. I was really lucky. I traveled to Rome earlier on in my life. I was traveling overseas.
It certainly wasn't
this year, and it may not ever be any other year. But I was traveling to Rome for a friend's wedding, and it was in Italy in Tuscany. And so we stopped off at Rome, as you do, because you got to fly in there from Oz. And I remember looking at the huge roundabouts in Rome and thinking, like, around these huge monuments or multi-directional circular routes around huge monuments that have got to manage, you know, 3 and 4 lanes of traffic either side of the road, a huge amount of pedestrians, obviously is one of the biggest tourist things in the world. And looking at it, and because you aren't from there, going, how the fuck does this even work?
Yeah.
It's like, I've been in a country that has roads and roundabouts, and it even has monuments, but I'm looking at something that I should know how it works, and I do not understand. And I love the visuals of car parks and these interlocking things, because there's something, I don't know whether it's Pakula, who's just a fucking genius, which is very, very potential, or whether it's just the weird energy that Washington DC gives off, but there's something about when you see all of the traffic and you see, other than the fingers, and you see the cars moving out of the car park and you see them driving through the roads and you see them even approaching like a huge roundabout where there's this like greater looking building. It looks like a giant cheese grater. When I'm looking at that, I'm going, all these things should make sense. All these things should interlock, but it's like I've been struck deaf. Like there's people in front of me and they're speaking another language and I do not understand it.
And I think that parallels the audience's, thank you. He just pointed the microphone at my mouth, folks. He's a good host. But it parallels the audience's experience of trying to pass the information that the characters are passing.
Yes.
Because like at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you follow how they've put together this data.
Yes.
It just matters that data leads them to this guy's doorstep.
Yes.
So if your eyes kind of glaze over when they're sort of going, oh, this floor's here, and they work next to
each
other. And
it's completely fair on like even your first 5 watches of this to not have any clue the rationale. You're like, what? Like if you, as we do sometimes, like, dual screen it. Yeah. If you dual screen it for 2 seconds, or you have kids, or there's a noise in the other part of your house, or your dog gets up to move and like walk around in a circle to find a new spot on the floor that's better than the previous spot, you will miss this. Like you have to be focusing on the rationale, and the names can be a bombardment. But I think that like that's the blessing of the scrutiny of this exercise is absolutely. Like,
and it does all make sense. But I think the Pakula's choice of visuals here kind of reinforces that sort of confusion, that density of information, but also kind of says you, no, it's okay.
It's
like
okay.
You're meant to be a little overwhelmed here. Like this is supposed to be confronting.
Yes.
And you should, you know, this mystery shouldn't be easy to solve, because like if it is.
Yeah.
What does that say about us?
We don't, at every turn, we want these guys to be pushing shit uphill. Mm. Like that is, it's like anything that is worthwhile is these guys pushing shit uphill.
Absolutely.
And so it's just, it's this layered little brilliance of, once you get the revelation, it's actually them being able to understand it. And I think in other movies, they've kind of touched on it. Very recently, it was like Oliver Stone Snowden, or we had The Fourth Estate that came out with Benedict Cumberbatch as Julian Assange. It's like sometimes when you get these big dumps of, or there was like anonymous sources like dumping information into these outlets, or people discovering things and then, you know, passing it on to other media outlets. It's like they have to like actually get it, decode it, and then go, what the hell is it? Like, what is it? How many stories?
And interpret it and make, yes, make editorial decisions about it, which apparently makes the mainstream media untrustworthy. I don't know. It's a very weird time. It's a very weird time, folks. But no, like, this also speaks to, like, we know now more than at any other time in history that passing a lot of information is a difficult job, man. It's fucking tough. And you only have to look at, I don't know, the past 6 months, 8 months, if you include.
Has something happened in the last 6 months?
No one is ever forgetting 2020.
Fuck me. It is an unbelievable year. I mean, I think when we last caught up face to face, we were both worried about how our country, especially our regional areas and tourist hubs and a lot of working class people who like rely on these seasonal peaks to kind of help them coast through the rest of the year. How the hell are these people going to survive a year where things have been burnt out? No one has money. Like one of our peak holiday seasons is just engulfed in smoke. No one wanted to leave the house at that time.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't with the kids and my family. And I know that you, like we barely left the house some of the days because, you know, you worried about smoke and whatnot. And, you know, a lot of Christmases and all that sort of thing was, you know, ruined as opposed to just places being burnt out, houses being lost, all those other things that are actually real as opposed to your experiential stuff.
And now we call that time the good old days.
Remember when Australia was just on fire?
The halcyon days of January 2020.
Far out, man.
And what a time. But no, but if you look at, you know, the misinformation, the conflicting information, the obvious deliberate conspiracy theories and attempts at deflection, the politicizing of public health issues, all this stuff, which, you know, you like to think that the average person is rational, but maybe the irrational people have a bigger voice in the online space. But you know, like, shit's getting crazy out there, man.
It is crazy. I'm finding it. The hardest thing to look at is, you know, one of the things I love about this film is that there is absolutely an understanding of like political allegiances, but the undercurrent is ultimately respect. Mm. And I think it's about the framing of different political arguments are always like, if you criticize but with respect and you have facts that underpin it, then we can come to an agreement that something is morally right or morally wrong. And the great
and the rules of the game are set. They're fixed.
Yes. It's like if you do the right thing, that's right. And if you do the wrong thing, and then there may be the knife's edge of right and wrong in some issues, but it's right and wrong is kind of black and white. And I think what is crazy is, and this is what you think of, like, you remember all those movies from the 90s, like Independence Day, where there's like an external threat that isn't another nation that is a uniting force for the world.
Everyone and comes together.
Everyone comes together. And it's like,
it's not true.
There's nothing better than a virus to help you understand that, like, that's essentially an external threat. Mm. A really insanely unlucky thing that has happened in the world for whatever reason. It is mutated, it is there, it exists, and it kills, you know, 2% of, or 2 to 3% of people who get it, and therefore 2 to 3% of the world's population is, dude. I think I would just carry the two. It's a fuckload of people. And so you go, this seems like an opportunity for people to rally around something to help one another. And in some countries, it's done unbelievably. And you look at like people standing in stadiums in New Zealand watching rugby, crying and cheering. And then you look at the United States and it's unfathomable to me when I look at this country that is depicted in this film as the country that is now that we are looking at.
What I find interesting is that traditionally, back when the world was sane, the Nixon administration was seen as sort of the low watermark of American governmental malfeasance, corruption, criminality, wrongdoing. Now, we can kick that ball back and forth if you want because, you know, at any administration, Bush, you can pull out examples and go like, well, what about this motherfucker? It's like, well, that's true, man, but come on, Nixon. And then you look at the current situation with Trump. Finally, someone said the name. And you look at this, all the president's men, and it's like,
Nixon's dreamboat.
The good old days. The good old days.
Nixon's a fucking dreamboat.
Like, he might have been a demon, but at least he knew how to wear a fitted suit.
Oh, that's the most petty king response I've had to the Nixon presidency on this show. I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, like I look at Nixon and I don't know if I've mentioned it a couple of times on the show or once on the show, definitely, but absolutely tremendous 2019 documentary film called Apollo 11, where a filmmaker, and his name escapes me this second. I'll look it up in just a moment. But
I have an interview with him on sbs.com.au.
Oh, there you go. So it's an assembly of rediscovered 65mm film of the entire Apollo 11 mission. That is, that, you know, because, you know, scientists wanted to document the incredible feat of human ingenuity that got America to the moon. And
especially if they didn't get to do it again.
Especially.
Always on the cards.
Which was definitely on the cards. And so the incredible footage being put back together, it is just such this soaring rallying cry of like, wow. No matter how much we concern ourselves with, you know, and rightly so, is the effects of climate change or social issues, like when human ingenuity is given the opportunity to rally around something, really magical things can happen. Mm. And in that movie, there's an amazing moment where Nixon features, and I was in the depths of this project planning and getting ready for it, and I was like, there's a moment where Nixon comes on and he says this beautiful and articulate and emphatic world citizenship rallying cry. And I thought, man, he's definitely corrupt and he's an egomaniac and he committed some of the worst political malfeasance. But for all of his flaws, he actually was a statesman. He knew what an occasion was. He knew that right now every single person in the English-speaking world and beyond is going to be hearing my voice as our country plants our flag on a celestial body. And people are really proud of human ingenuity to do that and what that means for our country in terms of innovation and you know, passion and all that stuff. And he made the country sound better. He made the possibility of, you know, American exceptionalism, you know, he made that manifest in talking and you know, announcing and congratulating to his astronauts. And I thought in that moment when I was watching that documentary, it just reinforced something. There is no fucking way in hell that the current president of the United States could ever say anything remotely as articulate, remotely as selfless, or underscore and unify Americans around a rallying cry of this exceptional thing. There's just no way that it would ever happen. And in a contemporary America, even with a president as inspirational and as articulate as Barack Obama, you look at him and you look at who's followed him and it doesn't even seem real.
We are in the darkest timeline. It is very weird. If we're going to jump from the sublime to the ridiculous, I recently did an article on Total Recall, that other fine political thriller
of
the past, because it's its 30th anniversary. And one of the things I brought up is like, yeah, you know, it's not very subtle, but isn't it weird how all the most bizarre and over-the-top like sci-fi satires of the 80s and 90s now seem really prescient?
Yes.
This dark year of our Lord 2020. You know, when you can look at stuff like Demolition Man, just go, oh, yeah, on the money. Yep. Nailed it.
All this stuff, we're like, ha, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
A year and a half ago.
It's like, oh, all right, okay, yep. You know, we've got, basically walled off prisons in Melbourne at the moment. You know, like tower blocks being patrolled by, well, judges, basically. It's fucking Judge Dredd's happening down there. So this is the problem with going back to watch like All the President's Men, which is this, you know, very cerebral, very serious, very incredibly well-made, wonderful political thriller. I don't think we'll ever see a movie like this again, simply because the subject matter doesn't exist anymore.
No.
When someone goes back to make a, you know, their fucking political drama about the Trump administration, who do you get to do that, man? Oliver Stone will be dead by then.
Oliver Stone's the only guy that could do it.
What's his face? Big Short.
Adam McKay. Big Short is a terrific film.
Big Short is fantastic. Yeah. Give it to McKay. Yeah, McKay doing the Trump administration. I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, I would too. It's so hard because it's all so stupid. The thing, I've spoken to a couple of guests and I often talk about it because my friend Sean Burns, great friend of the show in One Heat Minute Productions, great Bostonian film critic, talks about, you know, as a kid, his parents being obsessed with the Watergate trials and you could buy the transcripts of the Nixon tapes and you could get the trial transcripts and stuff like that that came in these big phone book size things. And eventually after his parents read them, there were great doorstops in his house. And I love that visual. I sometimes reference it and think about it. And I just think I would love to read those Nixon tapes. Like, oh, I'd be fascinated. But I can barely read a Trump tweet. There's nothing.
It's like, because the syntax is so bad. It's not that you're not running out of attention. You're just like, those words don't go together.
And it's I think it's both those things. It's that the syntax is bad, but it's like there's nothing there. There's surface, and then it's deflection. Like it's stupid statement, factual inaccuracy, really ill prepared and dumb attempt at comedy from in the hackiest, most bullshit way. And then when people call him on all of the factual inaccuracies or the flat-out lies or the tactless approach that he's taking to elucidate something that is really serious, you then get the propaganda machine of Fox News that's just like, yeah, it's fine.
Well, even Fox have abandoned him now. Who's the new one? The America First
channel? Oh, my God.
Is that it? Is that them? Like, my eyes kind of glaze over.
I just...
But there's a new further right... like news network.
Further right.
Yeah, further right than Fox, because Fox has actually been critical of some of his like more outre statements.
I think I saw Hannity the other day go on and go, if wearing a mask means that I can have baseball back, I'll wear a mask.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, did someone just say a rational statement of like, let's not politicize something, let's just try and, you know, if we can think about...
Did someone bend Hannity over and ram a spinal column straight up his asshole till it connected with the base of his brain?
Yes. It's like, wait, what? Did someone just say something objective? And there have been plenty of opportunities, right? Mm. What's crazy, and this is something that I don't know if you or I are ever going to answer, but it's just a fascinating... deliberation that you have is that when Nixon made his decision, which ultimately is the culmination of the film in teletype, to resign, it is the thing that the film doesn't cover, but obviously the layers of the different books and things like that and reporting does cover in a lot of detail and later on, is Nixon is not only worried about his ultimate standing in American history because he has that hubris and he wants to be remembered as a president who accomplished things. The pressure of the Republican Party to say, yeah, we'll take the L on you, but we will get another candidate.
Mm.
That doesn't seem like the Republican Party that exists now, who all of their major candidates were like screamed down off podiums by Trump and bullied out of the race. I mean, without him following this cult of personality, it doesn't seem like they're ever going to have a candidate they feel like they could replace him.
Okay, so the current Republican Party core is so far to the right that it's ludicrous.
Yes.
But there, what we should also be worried about is there is a current movement called the New Lincoln Movement, I believe. I was just listening to it, to a podcast about it today on my... while I was waiting for you to show up. And it's basically right-wing activists, like Republican conservative activists, alienated by Trump.
Yes.
Who are basically trying to wedge the Democratic Party. So they want the core of the Democratic Party going forward to resemble the Republican Party up until the primaries of 2016.
Yes.
Now that's horrifying.
It is.
Because that means it's right wing versus far right wing. And there's no sort of progressive or even, you know, what passes for fucking progressive or liberal in the States option at all, which is like I need to sit down. Like that's nightmarish.
Yeah, it's like that. I think it's one of those things where it was like, who was it? Was it Rand Paul who ran in the election with George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton in that first election? And Rand Paul's sort of centrist right or libertarian.
Yeah, anti-war.
Anti-war
guy.
Anti-war guy. But he had, there was this great bridging of he had very, in some respects, very progressive, but also had some conservative bent, especially when it was fiscal policy, etc. And he sort of bridged this gap. And so what happens, it didn't actually chew into the Clinton vote as much necessarily, but it demolished the Republican base, because so many Republicans flooded, anti-war Republicans flooded towards the Rand Paul vote, and that's what ultimately got Clinton elected at the time, because it's those sort of things. That's kind of the sort of extremely summarized version of that.
So we need another libertarian to kind of step up to the plate and go, hey, vote for me. You won't win.
You will not win.
But we'll get the orange boy out, and that's all that matters. But this is what's interesting, okay? So Nixon, bless him, and I'm the only person in history who will ever say that, resigned.
Yeah.
But one of the questions circling around Trump is like, so if he loses, will he go? Like, will he step down willingly? Like, if he legitimately loses the election, or does he say fake result, fake news, the fix is in, my Praetorian Guard is standing by, what does the Secret Service do? What do the Marines do? What happens if the emperor refuses to step down? And I'm not saying that will happen. I actually don't think that'll happen. I think that's crazy.
I think it's crazy, but it's you know what's crazy about it? It's plausible.
Yeah.
It's so plausible.
But the fact that the talking point is out there.
Yes.
Okay. And like Biden's brought it up. Mm. Okay. It's not just people like me going, oh, what if he tries to stage a coup when, you know, the Democratic
this isn't a threat, unfortunately.
Nominee presumptive is going like, well, you know, we have systems in place to deal with that. It's like, no one's ever had to bring that up before in the history of the Republic.
No. I mean, he's going to leave. He's going to go play golf. That's the only...
He is hoping. But also in comparison to Nixon, there's a man who clearly doesn't care or doesn't understand how to care about his place in history.
No, he doesn't give a rat's about that.
Oh, no, I think he does. I just think he's working from different metrics to like every sane human being on the planet. I think what he considers as victories and monuments, we would consider as insanity.
Yeah,
like this garden of American heroes they're putting together in the middle of a fucking, you know, pandemic with, you know, bodies getting stacked in the streets and states not having enough PPE for their first responders. And, you know, he's like, well, let's build a garden of American heroes just to kind of move the needle back away from all those horrible black people who are tearing down those Confederate statues. It's, oh, for fuck's sake.
And, you know, the great irony of all of that and Dave Chappelle even said it in his extremely insightful 23-minute, atomic bomb of a little document, 846, where he was just like, a lot of those statues were put up in response to activism in the 60s.
Yeah, no shit.
A lot of, like, there's so many of them that were put up. It's like there were states that were so staunchly opposed to the civil rights movement that they were like, oh, we're going to just celebrate all of our Confederate heroes and we're going to build new statues to them in the 1960s.
There's an outfit still exists called the Daughters of the Confederacy who are responsible for so many of those goddamn things.
Daughters
of the Confederacy, and they are just terrible, waspy, racist, white bitches who hate black people and like gray uniforms and horses. hence, statues to them everywhere.
I mean, look, if they want grey uniforms, Starship Troopers. We talked about Paul Bowman. Starship Troopers.
And there's nothing politically sus about that movie whatsoever.
It's so funny you bring up Paul Bowman. I watched a fun documentary the other night called You Don't Know Me. Know Me spelt N-O-M-I.
I have got to see that.
It's very fun. It's very fun. I watched it. And it for anyone who hasn't heard about it, it is essentially a revisiting. And a reclamation, if you like, of Paul Verhoeven's Showgirls and sort of charts the critical response to it and then how people have come back around to it. And it's,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This place in queer culture and drag culture and sort of cult movie nights that originated in San Francisco and how the critical response at the time, and especially coming out of like Adam Naiman wrote a really terrific book on it that sort of reclaims it, that it's not like it's not a great movie, it's not a trash movie, it's one of those things that is both great and trash, and ultimately like a lot of Verhoeven's movies, it is playing to the satire and excess of America. And I think that people looked at it and thought that it was being
serious
and grotesque and sort of like sexually insane, because that's the only way you can describe the sexual activity that happens in that movie. But it's like, it is a satire of those things. And so it's sort of come back around in the consciousness. So it was this fun little documentary, and it was, yeah, speaking of Verhoeven and speaking of America. And when I was watching it, I was just thinking again, sometimes satires, they push against buttons and they rail against things in such a way that it's jarring. And it's only upon reflection, you're like, wow, actually that was really meaty. And, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of it. What is a wonderful episode coming up with Matt Zolzaitz, in minute, I think it's in the 105th minute of this film. It's the first rat fucking minute of discussion with Deep Throat in the Garage. And, you know, Matt was just talking about how this movie feels. Now I'm talking about All the President's Men, feels like a fantasy.
Yeah.
Like when we started this project, because Travis was within the first few episodes of the show, this was a prescient document about a sort of blueprint of the tireless and sometimes thankless pursuit to hold truth to power and to validate the Fourth Estate and to lionize really powerful acts of journalism that ultimately help to hold people to account who don't get held to account by any other mechanism. Whereas now you're like, nah.
Fake news, baby. Fake news.
It's like, there is nothing that the Trump presidency that I've seen so far could do. That there is nothing that they could do, I think, in my mind right now, that would have him ousted. Like, would have him, I mean, and I'm talking about, unless he was like Tony Scott in The Last Boy Scout and like had like opened one of his next press conferences by murdering a black person in a press conference, you know, like he'd still find a way to say that it was fake news.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a deep fake, right?
it's a deep fake.
Just like in The Running Man, they put his face on. See, that's another pressure. It's nuts. What broke my heart, not really broke my heart, because, you know, fuck Republicans, but, what really kind of shook my faith in humanity and bipartisanism is the way that the Republican establishment rallied around Trump.
Yes.
Particularly at the time of the impeachment, where it was clear that he needed to go, and they just went, no, we have decided to disregard the evidence. And at that point, you know, all are guilty, all are complicit.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't walk that back. You had the chance to pull the trigger on this fuckhead, and you decided not to.
And if they did it,
yeah,
this is what I don't understand.
Well, if they did it, we'd have Mike Pence praying in the streets for a cure to COVID and probably twice the death toll. So I don't fucking know, man. But you know, it'd be different.
These laughs, I promise you, are laughs of like, I have no other reaction to what that could be like. Mike Pence, even worse.
Yeah.
Not wearing masks.
Not wearing masks. And it'd be like fucking Gilead over there. All right?
Oh, jeez. It's already like Gilead in some of those states.
See, one of these freaks who calls his wife mother? I get the feeling that he does. Like, oh, me and mother were watching The Late Show the other day.
Oh, God. No. No. We can't have that. We simply cannot have it. I mean, if he's impeached and Pence goes in, ultimately, there's a power vacuum.
Mm.
Like, I just don't. So, let's just.
Then you get enough, like, rat fucking within the Republican ranks. See, I brought it back around in the movie.
Yes.
Well done. To mean that, you know, we basically kind of don't have anything catastrophic happen until the election comes around and the Dems win.
Because yes.
The Americans, like, you can't run with Pence, like, in the front, man. Like, no.
No. No, 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 no.
You don't lead with that face.
No, no. And I think that there just seems to me like and this comes back around to politics in our own country. It's like there have been plenty of power vacuums that have happened in Australian politics. Like when some of our leaders have gone so far right that the more centrist parts of their party have wanted to bring them back. And it only has to happen to sort of the Tony Abbotts of the world.
To make sure everyone else kind of goes, maybe not that far.
Not that far. And then the person who was incumbent, the person who essentially ousted him is gets undercut and re-ousted, which is Peter Dutton, who's just equally, or if not further, a more deplorable and disgusting right-wing person. And it's just like, sort of conservative folk, like a stack of like, especially working class folk who are more conservative, especially in our super multicultural society that we have in Oz. Like there's definitely, you know, more religious, especially religious-based conservative folk, I think just get preyed upon and capitalized upon a lot of the time by sort of Western conservatives, because they're just like, oh, we just want to say the buzzwords that make you vote for us, but we don't actually give a shit about you.
We are really letting our political flags fly on this episode. like in case you've ever been in doubt, folks.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm to the left over here.
Yeah, I'm definitely over there too. I mean, in case you haven't wondered, listening to this show, but I think, you know, this is the other thing is, I think as part of this show, and I know that we may not necessarily have gone on the record with it with an article or something like that, but the thing that I am thankful for in Australian politics is, while I think that our current Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, is ultimately a dullard and I'm not a fan of his with a lot of his policies, I've been so thankful to live in this country and watching our Prime Minister defer the decision-making around how we respond to a virus to our chief medical professionals.
But that is because of his mishandling of the bushfires.
Yes.
Because like, it's the 1-2 punch. Yeah. We got through the bushfires and he fucked the pooch on that one. And then suddenly COVID hit and I swear to Christ, someone just got him by the shirt front and went, if you drop the ball on this, we are unelectable for a decade.
Yes.
So don't fuck this up. Fang money into Social Security. We'll walk it back as quickly as we can. And the fuckers are already trying.
Yes.
But just for now, just band-aid everything. Listen to the guys know what they're talking about. And we'll just get through this as fast as we can, because it's not about the short-term economy. It's actually about the long-term electability.
Yes.
That's it.
That's it. And we can continue to then... we can continue to praise what we've been able to do with an international crisis and sell like people on our response to this thing. So whoever was in his ear, what I can say is he listened.
Yeah, brilliant political operator, whoever the fuck that was.
Whoever the people were that helped make those decisions made them. And so, you know, you look at some folks in the States and different people responding badly and different governors and all this. And it's the one thing where you're like, I relish our smaller population in a lot of respects, and I relish that the national government made calls and imposed certain things and basically said to the states, you operate within these parameters, and this is what our national heads of medical professionals, you know, chief medical officers are saying, and we're going to do that, so you operate within their guidance. And I just think that you then come out of it and you're like, man, at least the humility to go, I am not the guy who's going to stand up here and tell people to drink bleach and sunburn themselves.
Yeah, the bar's pretty fucking low.
It's low. But I'm just saying, at least the deferring of to expertise is relief. It's like, to me, that goes, at least then you're not down the rabbit hole with someone talking nonsense every day. Yeah. And then sometimes there are hard-hitting questions. What do you think? What do you think? And at least you then, because the journalists aptly are trying to, you know, ask personal opinions. It's like, I'm going to defer my I'm going to respond in the way that our chief medical officer recommends. As a citizen of this country and as the leader, I'm going to role model what our chief medical officers say.
Regard the PhDs on it. And also the other great outcome of this is WA is now effectively its own country, which is what I, as a former Travis WA resident, can say. It's what we've wanted all along.
It's what you've wanted
Fuck
all
along. Fuck you, people. We are out. Yeah, and was it something league? It doesn't matter. But yeah, the WA independence movement never really went away. Just been sleeping.
It's been sleeping and waiting to shut that border. It's a big border. It's a big border.
Yeah. But yeah, most of it's uninhabitable. So most of it doesn't need patrolling. We can just leave you to your own devices. Dehydrate out there.
Yes, absolutely. Look, it's so weird. It's a strange time. It's nice to talk about this movie and to hope that these institutions and things. And the other thing is just to remind people to stay urgent and stay angry and keep holding things to account. Because the other thing, exactly as you just said, Trav, that I think that I love about this film and what it inspires in terms of critical thinking is just going, you need to keep holding people to account and digging underneath some of the detail. And that's what great investigative journalists are doing all the time, is like going, here's this overarching statement and here's the actual detail that matters to the individuals and people. And then when they see that there's weirdness happening, it's to press it.
Yeah.
It's to put your accelerator on it and go, why is this ambiguity here? And why is this weirdness here? And why is that sort of stuff? And, you know, thankfully, the Black Lives Matter movement for the current political party is still simmering, but there's been a lot of societal responses to that and knowing that it's on people's mind and it matters deeply to people, because our, you know, I think that was the latest greatest snafu from our current prime minister, saying that there's never been slavery in this country.
Whoops.
And then that person who shirt fronted him about COVID said, shut the fuck up. You're very electable. If you say anything else, you're going to fuck this up.
Just need to make sure no one keeps digging in the sports rorts or what happened in the recent by-election and the money going into that electorate.
Yeah.
The Great Barrier Reef Foundation, that's one of my favorites. They tried to phone me up for a donation the other day. I was like, motherfucker, you got like half a billion off the government. What are you hitting me up for? I'm a freelance writer. I got no money.
And the other big thing I think both of us can agree on, because this is just the sort of hegemonic media in Australia, sort of usually we don't really need a Fox News in this country, because usually
Murdoch takes care of it.
Murdoch takes care of it. And also they kind of toe the party line to a certain extent. It's either they're towing the party line and they're in the pockets of every politician and just sort of regurgitating kind of blindly in a lot of the commercial media anyway of what the company line is, so to speak. But, you know, we've had fucking deplorable people like Pauline Hanson, an Australian political entity for about 23, 24 years in this country, that is being propped up from the platform of these large media conglomerates and has been getting away with it. And they're like, oh, now just today, we're going to not put her in our show anymore. And it's like, don't have to apologize for today. You have to apologize for 23 years of us enduring this idiot, this moron who can barely speak. And it's like, thankfully, the political entity in our country who's a moron and can barely speak and is blatantly racist isn't the prime minister. Like, it hasn't manifested to that, thankfully.
But still ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, but I mean, look, that's the dumb response. That's, for me, that's the outlandishly stupid response, is that, like, these media companies hired this person to do a job that they knew was going to do, that they knew is racist, and they're like, yeah, like, well, she said something racist that we knew she was going to say, oh, we can't have her. And it's like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
And it's not like they can turn around and go, well, the tenor of the times has changed. I mean, apart from the obvious sudden uptick in awareness of racism and institutionalized racism. But it's not like you can sort of look at what she said 20 years and go, oh, that back then it wasn't that controversial. Like, yes, it fucking was. Always knew.
But they always knew, and they looked at it like a car crash. I think it was that thing that we are only going to be able to look at and review in hindsight about the kind of perverse curiosity of the thing. Mm. Like, when Trump came out, it was a perverse curiosity. People like, man, I can't believe this guy's saying all this stuff. He's never going to be elected. Yeah. And that, and in Australia, fortunately, we were right, because Pauline Hanson did make a big political splash, did come on the scene, but ultimately could not usurp. In fact, probably pushed our Conservative Party further to the right than they'd ever been before, because there was a voice there originating from our Florida, Queensland.
I thought Victoria was our Florida now.
They're both.
To lock them down.
Both our Floridas. Let's just safely say.
Maybe in trouble if we've got two Floridas, man. That's all I'm saying.
So I think that
maybe three too many.
It's pretty bad. But I think that, yeah, I think we've been really fortunate, but there's that weird thing that happens when there's a new political entity that is forthright, that is kind of saying batshit, that in the past would have been a blip. It feels like in the time of an older president's men or a time of Washington Post, if there was some like strange person who was standing on a soapbox in a square, would get the funny coverage. Like, look at this racist person that's a dope, that is ultimately a racist person that's seeming to get some followers. Like, isn't that a cultish thing? They just wouldn't get the platform. But what happened in Australia, and that didn't manifest in any kind of other than being a part of our society and public awareness for 20 odd years, but it hasn't manifested anything major.
I think what it does get, and I think this is true of the States as well as Australia, is it lets people be racist in the privacy of their own voting booth.
Mm.
So when you've got some fucking demon like Hanson or Trump who says the quiet part loud, while, you know, people like us go like, that's horrible. That is, to coin a phrase, deplorable. There are people who may not vocally go like MAGA 2020, but might go tick, yes, yeah, for Trump, tick, yes, for Hansen. And that's, I don't know, you know, like you can't, you know, interrogate your neighbors. Are you a secret fucking racist? It doesn't work that way. But, you know, sometimes when these people win, you got to kind of wonder, well, like, it's like not everyone who voted for Trump or not everyone who votes for Hansen or the LNP or whatever is an out-and-out flag-waving, you know, wog-bashing, close-the-borders, vocal racist.
It's,
but what are they voting for? What, you know, what's in their heart when they step into the ballot box and go, like, which box am I going to tick?
Yeah, I think the thing that's so disappointing about those personalities having the airtime so much is, you know this and I know this, there are so many fucking talented, diverse journalists in this country who some of them in some networks are emerging, or they're the flagship people of those networks now, and like they're definitely filling a gap in our media, but you still see the children of the corn of our major news magazine shows every fucking day, where there's just like a balding white guy and three blonde women, or, oh shit, they're spicing it up, there's a brunette now. And it's just like, that's, you know, that's it. It's just blonde white people all together and, you know, just shouting about shit that they don't fucking know anything about. It's so stupid. Like what is crazy is that, like, and I don't know what happens to certain people, but it's like if someone said, Blake, would you like to come and talk about Brian De Palma on our show? I'd probably go,
oh, yeah?
I mean, I'd go, have you talked to my buddy?
Oh, no, you wouldn't. No. You threw me out of the bus immediately. No, you grabbed that ring.
No, but I even De Palma, who I'm very familiar with and like a lot of his work, and I've read a shitload of books, I've talked to him and studied him, I'm not that guy. But if someone's like, Michael Mann.
Oh, yeah, you're the guy.
I'm that guy. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll take that. But I still even feel like I would feel insecure about that, because I'm like, are you sure? Like, have you asked someone else? Like, maybe this isn't, I'm not the right guy for this. And what I feel is so weird is that's in the grand scheme of things, and I know that I'm thankful for it, but like discussing films as I do in this podcast and we talk about it, it's like ultimately in the life and death world becomes a real trivial thing, and it's a balm, and art is important, but like there are people who are talking about on Australian TV, and thankfully they're being litigated about it, about starting a new white Australia policy where they create an entire new stolen generation of Indigenous kids because it's okay to have Indigenous kids be adopted by white people. And they've got a whole white panel talking about everything they know about it. And it's like, what the fuck? Who made this decision? What producer in their right mind would get that person? It's so dumb.
Kellyanne Kennelly, she's got some.
She's got some
hot take on this.
She's got some moxie. Kerri-Ann Kennelly is your drunk uncle, everyone. She's your drunk uncle. We all have them. We see them at Christmas. They try and kiss us inappropriately, and we ignore them. That's who she is, except she's blonde and has had a shitload of plastic surgery, probably, allegedly, and is now on your national TV spouting her kind of backward conservative, I'm still in power bullshit on national television. It breaks my brain. And I'm that's what I don't understand. Like, we, you know, and I'm thankful to talk to great cinema minds and intellectual minds that come into this show, whether they be journalists, whether they be people who've got that political understanding to sort of get the expertise. But like, I would not be that person that would want to stand up there. And I just think that magazine television, and especially in this country, has got a lot to say for the passive indoctrination of people with bullshit, because they get people who are not experts to come on and whack lyrical ad nauseum about things that they don't know about, and especially when it's in regards to race or politics or social issues, and they do it at the same echo chamber, and like people are just sitting passively in their homes being indoctrinated every day, and they've got to take some fucking accountability. And it's not good enough in my mind to just go, oh, well, I'm sorry about this one appearance. Here's the other 23 fucking years of this racist moron being on our show. She fucking exists and has a living. She should be on a street with a placard. She should be like, if I had my wish, it would be to plant her straight and to die with a vengeance right on that street with that placard with that word that ends in a hard R, and just fucking leaving her there and seeing what happens. Let's see what happens.
And you've been listening to All the President's Minutes with Blake Howard and his special guest Travis Johnson. This podcast used to be about a movie at one time. But no, you're right. They always get the wrong people to talk about the wrong shit. They just do. I remember once, I won't say who it was, but it was after one of the awards nominations got announced, and a lot of prominent women directors were kind of shut out. And I got asked if I wanted to be interviewed about that, and I just sort of went, why don't you get a fucking female film critic to do that? Like, you don't need old white guy Trav to come in and go, well, the reason there aren't enough dames in the Oscars this year is... No, you have to pick your commentators.
Yeah.
But also pick me because I need the money. But no, it's true. Like sometimes I've been in the position where I wound up writing about stuff I wasn't entirely authoritative on. And in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, I should have knocked that back. But, you know, had to eat that.
Oh, No.
I'm just expanding the scope to say, but when you're looking at the entrenched constant, whitewashing of opinion and it's political and social and cultural opinion, in the mainstream shows and the mainstream kind of opinion journalism of our time.
Yes.
You know, it's great to think that we all live online now and no one watches the Today Show and Good Morning Australia, but it's fucking wrong. It's simply not true. You're living in a bubble. Don't lie to yourself. But yeah, like that's how these opinions get entrenched. That's how people get the idea that it's okay to fucking hold forth stupid opinions on matters which they have, like, you know, no what of.
Yes.
And, you know, that's how we wind up in the situations that we find ourselves in today.
Yeah, it's you know, I think that's you never, in a 24-hour news cycle, obviously you can, it's insanely hard to expect even really great institutions and publications to consistently get the right people to talk about them in the level of urgency that things happen. And I'll share a funny story in just a second, but it's like, I think when we tie it back to this film, it's like, that is the relief that this movie has, is the editorial guidance and also the editorial straight up pushback of something not having legs. And that's something that I think that we've talked about on this show a little bit, like outside of obviously the cinematic craft that we talked about at the beginning of this show, but it's like, that's something that I think is something that is valuable, is, you know, maybe it's a behavior that I do. It's like, you have your outlets that you follow, even if you have a diverse outlets, but trying not to get too swarmed by the constant click of those outlets.
Yeah.
Because it's actually watching a story emerge over several days. You watch the current maintaining journalists like actually say important things and develop the story over multiple days because they're doing further investigation instead of just a ticker-tape cycle of repetitive information.
This happened. That didn't actually happen. So we're printing a retraction, but that's but the original falsehood is still going to be up.
Yes, all those things. I think that's one of the things that I look at this movie and I look at even just these moments in this minute and go, they are so guided and protected, if you like, by this. If you don't have this, it's done.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think is missing. Maybe that's me diagnosing, in my opinion, of what is missing.
We should talk about the Ron Howard film, The Paper.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. But, you know, Glenn Close saying, you know, like, you know, if, you know, we'll hang him today, we'll save him tomorrow.
Yes.
Like, we can always print a retraction.
Yes.
And Michael Keaton fighting. It's like, you know, if we don't get it right, what are we here for?
And bad editors, unfortunately, have been played by women, and also in State of Play. Which Helen Mirren plays, you know, after all the gush that I say about Ben Bradley, both in this movie and the gush you can say about Tom Hanks if you're a fan of The Post, and even Peter Skarsgård in Shattered Glass, you know, like holding Hayden Christensen to account mainly for his performances in the Star Wars prequel trilogy. But it's that the unfortunate thing is that a woman in that movie as well is like, oh, who gives a shit? Just get the clicks. Half do the story. And it's the journalists, the old hat journalists going, no, that's probably not a good idea because we're going to have to do a backflip on this if we're wrong. That, you know, that's those portrayals don't help.
No.
Those portrayals don't help the fake news, lionizing the editors who are like, just print whatever, who cares? Sensationalize it, doesn't matter. There's a lot of good journalism movies and there's a lot of interesting journalism movies. Paper's a good one, Broadcast News is a good one. In our time, The Insider, Shattered Glass.
Nightcrawler is a really interesting one.
Nightcrawler is exactly
like the flip side of what we're talking about.
It is. It's Woodward and Bernstein. It's Woodward and Bernstein if they just decide to kill people and film it. Instead, they're knocking on these doors, they kill them. They kill them in the houses. It's the alternate card of this movie. Mate, sorry. Thank you for bearing with my tirades.
Oh, usually no worries,
usually you're the angry one.
I know.
You're just so happy to see me. It's nice.
I've been meditating in lockdown, man. I've found inner peace.
Oh, look at you. Bullshit.
It's a complete lie.
One funny story I'll tell you. I was going in to our national broadcaster to speak about, I think it was the Golden Globes. I was in a tuxedo and I was ready to rock and roll to talk about them. And I was living in Newtown in Sydney, and right in the center of Sydney is basically where the broadcaster is. And I was just about to take two champagne glasses and a bottle of champagne to just have on the show and just start drinking with the host to say, look, this is how much the Golden Globes matters.
Yep.
So let's have a drink. Because it doesn't matter. It's like 86 people chose these awards. They spent probably millions of dollars putting this broadcast out there. We're talking about it now, so this is how important it is. I didn't do that. I didn't take the champagne. I forgot. That was lucky because on the way to the studio...
Oh, God.
David Bowie died.
I know where I was that day.
So do I. I was in the cab to the national broadcast.
I was watching The Hateful Eight.
It was right around that time.
It was. I was at the press screening of The Hateful Eight when we came out.
Everyone's phone exploded. Yeah. And so they get me in to do this and go, hey, look, we're hearing reports, rumblings that David Bowie died. And I'm like, well, the confirmation's here. And I held my phone up because I follow his son,
Duncan Jones.
And I'm like, Duncan just said, my dad's died. Like, I'm not going to be on here for some time. And they were like, would you like to say a few words?
And you're like,
about David Bowie. And I'm like, very fortunately, I could say things about his, like, even at a base level about his influence on the music industry, his incredible versatility and mutation throughout his career, and then also his incredible contribution to movies, even though he was so selective and had these little dalliances, but when he's in movies, they just seem to
pop.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. There's some magic that happens. Yeah.
The Labyrinth, The Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
I mean, the Prestige.
Prestige.
When he walks in as Nikola Tesla, the whole movie, like.
No one really talks about the Linguini incident, but that's okay.
The Linguini incident.
You ever see that one?
No.
Oh, yeah.
That's a banger.
Check that one out.
It's a recommendation.
Not one of his finest. Oh, Zoolander.
Zoolander's good.
There we go.
He brought it back. And brought it back to all the presidents. But I just remember in that moment, it's like there's a live moment demonstrating that there was an urgency to talk about it and to have an expert and to have someone who was notable potentially on screen.
But all they had was you.
All they had was me.
I have a similar story where one time my friend Blake Howard told a producer at the ABC to get me in because he couldn't make it in to talk about The Irishman and how that was going straight to Netflix. And I was an old hand at ABC radio by this stage. So I went, Sure, no worries. It's a last minute thing, but I'll just, you know, like I'll just jump on the next bus. I'll be right there. You know, looking like shit. hadn't shaved and hadn't brushed my hair. Just threw on a jacket. Made sure I was wearing shoes.
And
straight down there. And what Blake didn't mention, and the producer didn't mention, and nobody fucking mentioned until I turned left to go to the the radio studio, and they went, no, the TV studio's over there, was that it was for television. It was live television. So after a brisk 30 seconds in the bathroom, plastering down my hair with tap water, I was on our nation's broadcaster talking about Martin Scorsese.
Well, bless you.
Yeah.
Bless you. I'm sorry that they didn't tell you that.
No one told me.
Oh, well. Look, you. Hey, but to be fair, plastering down your hair with water, you knew the subject.
Oh, yeah.
You could talk.
That's
to
true.
It, go, you
know a thing or two about Scorsese.
A thing or two about Scorsese.
He's a friend of ours.
Yeah. He's the master. He's the maestro. Mate, thank you so much for coming on All the President's Minutes again.
Thanks for having me.
I knew it was going to be fun. I knew it was going to be fun. And I think that I really like your forthright voice because Facebook is a hellhole that I don't often occupy myself on. And one of the thrills that, and I will make sure that I link it in the description of this episode, is if you do follow Travis, Travis has like his public persona, if you like, I guess that's what they call it. Like a follow, like a following persona that you can have on Facebook. It's not like just like friends. And so there's a whole stack of people that follow. And Travis is one of those guys that people say great stuff and there's great conversations and movie stuff. And then sometimes there are people who are just batshit and it's a hellhole on there.
Yep.
And you hold people to account for their craziness. And it's just a, it's such an interesting little community that is around you.
It is quite a thing.
It is a thing. It is quite a thing indeed. And I admire you for your forthright opinions on there and just sort of no matter how brazen they are, folks are, they get equally brazen responses sometimes, which are very great, and I appreciate you. So thanks, mate.
Well, it keeps me entertained, and apparently it keeps you entertained.
It does keep me entertained.
You're more than welcome.
Where can people find you? Where's the best place for people to find you at the moment?
SailorandWhiskey.com, and SailorandWhiskey.com.au is about to be relaunched, possibly tonight if I get home and finish the last couple of tweaks on there.
Ooh,
so my
very
website,
nice,
which I haven't actually updated since like November last year, but I spent a little time in lockdown putting it onto a WordPress framework, jigging a few things, just, you know, making sure it all looks fucking schmick. Got a new logo done.
Beautiful.
Know, got hosting, the whole shebang. So like that'll be up like this week.
Beautiful.
I think at the moment, if you go to celluloidandwhiskey.com, you'll just see my old blogger site, which looks like shit. And I think the last article on there is about like Rambo Last Blood. So that's how out of date that is. But you can always find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, Sailor and Whiskey. I write for everyone.
Everyone.
Like I'll turn up. If you Google my name, like Travis Johnson Film Critic, you'll get something.
You'll get something.
You'll get something.
Just like we got on this show. We got more than something. Thanks, buddy. You're the best.
So are you, man.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.